Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Indie Corner Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got an awesome guest. So I'm pretty sure it's Kanan, right? Or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Sean Kanan, how are you doing, Sean?
Doing great, brother. Thanks for having me on.
I wasn't sure because, like, it could have been Kanan or it could be, you know, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody actually say your full name. So,
yeah.
That's good. So anyway, let me first talk, like, obviously we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, Karate Kid Part 3, because that was, you know, obviously that's probably what I know you the most from. But I was looking back at your credits and, oh my God, you've been in a ton of, like, just like special appearances and guest TV shows and a ton of stuff like that. Like, how much has television changed from when you used to audition back in like the 90s to like now?
Well, I think now, especially, you know, with COVID, so many auditions are being done as self-tapes. So that's required actors to develop a whole other skill set. It's technically based as well as, you know, the acting based. Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing. And it's nice for actors. It's convenient because, you know, you can record your audition until you're happy with it. As
right.
opposed to one time you read, maybe you're having an off day or maybe the casting director's not really giving you anything. So that's different. It also doesn't require you driving all over Los Angeles, which is, you know, the traffic's hellacious, and it's kind of nice to do it from your living room. You know, I've been really fortunate, especially like the last, I'd say, 2 years, that really all the work that I've gotten has been kind of an offer. And it's been just a blessing. You know, I've done enough work that people know me that sometimes I just get a phone call to do something. And that's the best, because, you know, truthfully, auditioning has very little to do with acting. Acting is reacting. Generally speaking, when you're reading with a casting director, you know, they're just looking down and reading the lines, but it's still kind of the best litmus test other than looking at work that you've done on film or TV to cast somebody. So, I'm happy not to have to audition as much.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. If you can get offers, that's probably the best for actors, because I'm sure it's just because as an actor, I mean, if you don't get it, that's normal, you know, or whatever. Like if you don't get the role.
Yeah.
So as an actor, were there any roles that you got? I don't know if you've been asked this question probably a million times, but are there roles that you've either didn't get or turned down that you're like, oh man, I wish I got that role?
Well, I remember auditioning against with Brad Pitt. We both auditioned for Days of Thunder, and Cary Elwes wound up getting it. I mean, it would have been pretty cool to do a movie with Tom Cruise. What else? I was offered, there was a series back in the day about Elvis Presley, and I was not exactly offered it, but I was being very strongly considered, and for some reason I just didn't think that would be a good career move, and I kind of nipped it in the bud. In retrospect, I love Elvis. I do a pretty good Elvis Presley, and I would have loved to have played it. I don't know what I was thinking, you know, sometimes, you know, but I think everything happens for a reason. I think there are roles that I've gotten that, you know, other people are sitting at home saying, wow, I wish that was a role that I wish I had. It happens to everybody. You know, you audition for so much stuff that you really have to be able to emotionally detach yourself from it once you're done. And it's hard because, you know, you always want the role, especially if it's a really great part, working with great people, but you just got to be, you know, on to the next. And, you know, without, you know, getting into my book right now, there's one thing I do talk about in the book where I say you have to be able to attach a positive association to what you might immediately deem as failure. It's like, you know, 95 times out of 100, when I audition, I don't get the role. And if if I associated failure with that every time, I wouldn't be able to set foot in another casting room. And so for me, what's really important is to concentrate on the positive. You know, maybe I got to read for somebody that wasn't familiar with my work. Maybe I got to prepare for a role that's sort of outside of my traditional wheelhouse. I met some new producers who weren't familiar with me. And so, you know, as long as you attach something positive to it, I'm able to diminish any feelings of, you know, negativity or anything like that.
I'm the same way, actually, because I was asked to be a stand-in for Harry Potter for Daniel Radcliffe. Not during Harry Potter, but he was doing a movie up in Richmond, Virginia, called Imperium. And I was they asked me all this question: do you mind shaving your head? Do you mind doing this? You know, whatever. You're like a couple inches shorter, but I think we can make it work, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
Get it. Like something happened. They never contacted me back. And I was upset at first. I was like, man, like that would have been cool. And I even messaged them going, hey, I can do extra work. I don't care what, you know, at this rate. And then all I could think about was like, maybe I'm just destined to work with them on another project, you know, or
you got to think.
Yeah. Maybe that was it. Maybe that the universe,
you know, I'll tell you a quick story. Years and years ago, I screen tested for a role in The Bold and the Beautiful with Steve Burton, who's on General Hospital. We wound up playing brothers, and neither of us got the role, and it was disappointing. And I don't know, it must have been like 10 years later, I got called back to Bold and the Beautiful and wound up playing Deacon Sharp, which has been one of the, you know, the greatest roles of my career. So, you know, you have to get philosophical with it and think sometimes that, you know, the universe is looking after you.
Right. Like just because you weren't in that part doesn't mean like right. You're not going to have something greater happen to you. And usually it does. Usually that's what happens. I completely. And plus I always look back at all the people like via audition that get the role or whatever. I always look at it like, you know what, that's their career, you know, right. And I should be really happy and excited for their career going.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer that other people's success is not your failure.
Exactly.
So I try as best I can to always be positive and, you know, happy for other people when they get roles. It doesn't do any good to allow that internal negativity and jealousy to swirl around. It's self-defeating.
So my mom, I told you before, is a huge General Hospital fan. She's she hasn't really watched it in a while. And, probably since you left or whatever. Yeah. She would say she remembered you because there's, I guess, two AJs, if I'm correct.
Actually been quite a few AJs. There was a couple when he was a little kid. And then as an adult, there were three. There was Billy Warlock. There was Gerald Hopkins. And me, not in that order, but yeah.
Oh, wow. And so you guys all have played the same character and done that. Do you still keep in touch with a lot of the people? Are a lot of the people still actually like around doing it?
Yeah. You know, I sometimes do autograph conventions. I'll see some of the actors. Steve Burton and I keep in touch. He's got a podcast that I was just a guest on about 2 weeks ago with Bradford Anderson. Talk to Maurice Bernard every now and again. We cross paths every once in a blue moon.
Okay, cool.
But it's like once you've done it, you're part of a fraternity or sorority. I mean, it's like you're a part of, you know, a group of people that all have undergone sort of the same experience. And so you've got a common denominator amongst you.
Exactly. And you just mentioned the autograph signings and stuff. You brought that into Studio City, which I thought was pretty funny. Like, you know, like, is that really what it feels like when you're there? It's just like,
No, not really. Because when I do them, I get paid. The one that my character, Sam Stevens, was doing was being told by his producer, you're going to shut your mouth. You're going to smile pretty and sign autographs. So it's not really like that. So I did take a little bit of license.
Right. Yeah. Well, I do horror conventions. So I know the same sort of, you know, I'm sure it's the same sort of gist of like people waiting and then, you know.
Yeah. Same deal. I've done horror conventions too. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's probably a different beast in a way, though. Like, I'm sure the people that like the soap operas aren't the same people that like the horror movies or whatever.
No, it's not. But I get an interesting cross section because I've got, you know, the Karate Kid fans. I've got the soap opera fans. I've done a couple of horror films. But I really enjoy talking to the fans. I mean, I'm sincerely humbled by the fact that people are willing to come out and, you know, take time out of their day, pay for a photo, you know, spend some time with me. And so, you know, I think it's a real blessing. And, you know, you form sort of a community, you know, I mean, I've become friendly with a lot of the people that initially approached me as fans. You know, I get emails from them and talk to them and I enjoy it.
Yeah. So you just mentioned horror films too. So I do want to mention Hack, which I absolutely love.
Thank you.
I mean, of course, I watched it back in the day, it was because Danica McKellar was the star, and I was just she's
Danica McKellar, not a bad deal.
Right. You got, yeah. How was it to work with her?
She was terrific. I mean, I hired her. I produced the film, so I was, she walked in the room, she read for it, and that was it. We were like, done, got her lead.
It's so fun. It's so, okay. All right. So I have to talk about this because this is so weird for me to know, like, that you still audition people, even though they're like, you know, they're pretty well-known people, but you have to do the same thing too. You have to go through the audition.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, when you're producing a film, you know, whether you're a studio or you're, you know, a small independent film like Hack, you know, when you're putting your money into something, or someone else's money, you need to see someone in the room and A, know that they still look like what you think they look like, B, that they're going to be easy to work with for a month, you know what I mean, or 6 weeks. You know, the last thing you want to do is hire somebody, pay them a lot of money, and they turn out to be a nightmare on the set. Because, you know, you can deal with someone that is not a particularly nice person, but you can't deal with somebody that slows down the machine because that costs money. And then you get into a big problem.
Have you had that issue? Like with somebody coming in the audition and you're like already, nope, that's not, you know.
Yeah, I really try and keep an open mind because I like to think out of the box when I'm casting something. I like to think that casting directors will do the same when I come in the room. I mean, I think there are times that, you know, you've got a pretty good idea, especially in things that I've written. You know, I have a pretty good idea of, you know, what I'm looking for, but it's like, come in and wow me and amaze me and show me a better idea and I'm all for it.
Right. Like that must have been what Studio City is like, because you got to basically get a group of people together that are going to be working on the series for like...
My wife cast the show and, you know, they're all friends of ours. I mean, these are all people that I've worked with before. And, you know, really in my head, I'd say at least four of the parts, I knew exactly who we were going to cast. I wrote the parts for them.
Okay.
So, our showrunner and director, Tim Woodward Jr., he hired a couple people that I didn't know. And man, they turned out to be terrific. You know, I had no idea. And, you know, in the back of my head, I was like, okay, I totally respect Tim. I know that he's got great taste, but you know, I hope, and they turned out to be phenomenal.
Right. Well, it's tough also because you're right there. You're kind of poking fun a little bit and also being a soap opera, you know, at the same time, which
I'm poking fun of the soap opera. If anything, I poke fun of myself.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like you're kind of like, it's an over exaggeration of probably who your character is and who you are, but you know.
Yeah. But I think that, that, you know, they say write what you know. And I mean, you know, I've been involved with daytime television off and on for 3 decades. And so, you know, there's not too many people that are going to have a better ability to convey what it's like to be an actor on a soap opera than I am. I can do it as well as anybody else who's done it. You know, so I wanted to show what it's like on screen. And yeah, we take some license and, you know, we have some fun, but more what it's like off screen. And I think what we've come up with off screen is fairly realistic. You know, I'm always pulling for the show to be funnier, but it is a drama. So I like to kind of infuse it with as much humor as we can get away with. But I think it's a fairly reasonable portrait of what it's like being a guy that's an aging soap star, you know, kind of hanging on to his job, dealing with, you know, being a flawed guy and dealing with, you know, emotional family issues and all the stuff that goes into, you know, being a human being and being an actor on a television show.
Yeah, it's sort of like you're just kind of, in a way, are you kind of like psychoanalyzing yourself a little bit?
Geez, I don't know if I'm psychoanalyzing myself. That's interesting. Probably. I mean, sure, probably. It's definitely, the favorite role, my favorite role that I've ever played. Followed closely by playing Deacon Sharp on The Bold and Beautiful.
Oh, and wow. Then I have,
yeah.
Well, it's a cool, I mean, well, I guess, you know, you can't really say that about Mike Barnes, because like Mike Barnes is like, oh, you've only done that once, you know, so far. Right.
Yeah.
You know,
I think the thing with Karate Kid 3 was that, you know, the character was largely one dimensional. And, you know, now as a guy that's, you know, I've done 1,000 episodes of television, I've done 25 films, you know, I see all the things that I would like to have done differently to layer the character, but really that's what they wanted. They wanted, the character was described as a 17-year-old white Mike Tyson who terrorizes Daniel LaRusso. And, you know, they weren't real interested in Mike's backstory or his psyche or why he did what he did. You know, we know he was motivated by money and wanting to get the Cobra Kai dojos. But for me, you know, as a more mature actor now, I would have liked to have layered it with more nuance, but that wasn't really what they wanted. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I gave them what they wanted, and it worked, I guess.
I never noticed that before. Mike Barnes, Mike Tyson. I never drew that into comparison, but you know, all you need is if you bring Mike back, you need like a neck tattoo, you know.
No,
you never know. Hey, the Cobra Kai, man, that's that show's been bringing back everybody. So I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's got to be weird a little bit, because like I'm sure you get like asked all the time.
About- I mean, I get grocery store line. I get asked. It's crazy, and you know, it's just humbling. It's, you know, that a character I did 30 years ago still has interest and relevance from the public. So I mean, for me, you know, it's great, and it's also kind of a great icebreaker. You know what I mean? Like, I'll give you an example. Last night, it's like basically in my underwear watching TV, and my wife had a business meeting. She's like, you have to come meet me at this restaurant. I'm like, Michelle, I don't want to come. She's like, please come. The guy I'm doing business with is an unbelievable Karate Kid Mike Barnes fan. And I'm like, all right, I'll go. And so, you know, I go and I don't know this guy, but instantly, you know, we hit it off, and it's, you know, we're able to have a connection because he's a fan of what I did. And then, you know, of course, you get to know each other as you know, people. But a lot of times people are just so interested to kind of, it's not meet Sean Kanan. They're interested to kind of, you know, meet the guy that played Mike Barnes and hear stories and that sort of stuff. I hope that didn't come off as sounding self-important, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's got to be a weird thing, because like as an actor, yeah, in a way, like people are expecting sort of that self-importance a little bit, because you've done something that people, you know, I'll use this as an example. John Mulaney had talked about how weird it must be for Mick Jagger to be Mick Jagger, because all he has to do is go like this, you know, Diet Coke, and it's in his hand, because yeah, he's Mick Jagger. But like, if we had that power as like anybody, like a normal person, like who's not famous, you know, we would be doing that power all the time. We'd be abusing it.
Because I haven't gotten that power yet. I'm hoping it arrives at some point, though.
It will. If you just keep going the path that you're going, it seems it all of a sudden you'll be like Diet Coke, and it'll be in your hand.
Well, I hope I never get to be that guy. You know, I hope that, you know, listen, I've been doing this for 35 years. I've had times in my career when I've been, you know, up, I've been down, I've been very well known, and I've been anonymous. And, you know, I have a theory that, you know, if you're cool and you get a little bit of fame and success, you become cooler. It allows you to help more people and whatever. And if you're an asshole and you get famous, you become a bigger asshole. So hopefully, you know, I'll go with the former rather than the latter.
It's kind of sure, like power, I guess, you know, only strengthens a person, right? Or whatever, to whatever
they're... If they've got character.
Yeah, exactly. So I really like I said, I was a huge fan of you growing up because of a lot of your television stuff. I was never into, you know, soap operas. That just wasn't my thing, but I got a lot of friends who were, and my family of, you know, my mom, of course, was really big into that and Days of Our Lives and, you know, all that fun stuff. So, I mean, you know, I got, when I was sick, I had to watch it because, you know, when I was sick at home, there was nothing else to do, you know, right, or whatever. So that was literally what was on. Now there's like way too many channels and streaming.
Too many choices, right?
I know, which is great for like content developers like yourself, who, you know, I'm sure Studio City would have just sort of been something that you were hoping would get on ABC or something. And now you can just do it yourself.
No, actually, we always wanted it to be on cable. It gives us a lot more latitude of the dialogue we use and the subject matter. So I'm actually really happy where it is right now. It's been great having it on Amazon Prime. And, you know, I like the fact that people are able to stream so they can kind of binge watch it all at one time. And really, you know, that becomes what is occupying most of their entertainment head for that period of time, so they really get involved in it and in the characters, and it, you know, hopefully has them wanting more. So I like it. It's also, you know, makes it more digestible. I mean, you know, gone are the days when you have to, you know, sit on your couch at 9 p.m. on a Thursday to watch your show. You know, people watch it, you know, when they want, how they want, with which device they want, you know. So I think it's great. It's power to the viewer, so to speak.
Exactly. Well, that's great. I like that. You know, do you watch TV? Is there anything that you've been watching?
I watch too much TV. I do. You know, I lately, like this last year. Okay, so right now we're on season 3 of 90 Day Fiance. And I mean, I love the shit. It's crazy. I watch all sorts of, you know, if I ever die and somebody looks at my you know, what I watch like on YouTube or Netflix, they're going to think I'm insane because I've watched every serial killer documentary there is, every UFO documentary there is. So, I mean, that's kind of what I like.
Wasn't there one recently? I'm not sure. It was Dahmer or somebody who Zac Efron played, you know.
I'm going to get the title wrong, but it was about Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy.
Was good. I did a good job.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm a horror director, and it's so weird. I'm so weird about like real life violence and stuff. Like I, if it's supernatural or it's like, you know, ghosts or something, I'm all for it. But if it's like a serial killer for real, that really could be like in my neighborhood.
The last film I saw was probably a week ago, and I watched Parasite. Have you seen that?
I have not yet. I know really good things.
My wife, like, was extolling the virtues of this film, and I'm like, babe, I'm just tired. I can't do 2 hours in Korean. And so I finally agreed to watch it. And, you know, you got to give it about, I'd say 10 minutes and then you're hooked. I mean, you know, the first 5 minutes, you're like, okay, this is in Korean, you're reading subtitles. And then you get over that. And then it's a little bit of character development. And then when you see what the hook is, you're like, oh man, I'm in. And it's terrific. I mean, I can see why it won the Academy Award.
So many people have said so many great things about it. So I, it is something on my watch list. It's just been, I mean, there's just so much, like we talked about earlier, there's just so much, especially with TV. I mean, I've got my normal shows like SVU to watch, you know, or whatever.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, I love SVU. We watched so much stuff during whatever this is, lockup, quarantine. I mean, it's not anymore, but we did all 12 seasons of, Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, yeah, you know, Criminal Minds is something that like has always been a part, like it's like NCIS. It's always been a part of television, mm-hmm. but I never really watched it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm in. And, you know, I don't know him well, but I know Shamar Moore. And, you know, I was like, I don't want to watch it. Shamar's show, I want to watch it. And I was like, I'm in, love it. So now we're like, okay, we just watched 12 seasons of a show in like 3 weeks. What's wrong with us? And then you're off to the next show. You know what I mean?
So this is gonna be my last TV question before we get, I really want to dive into your book. The TV question I have to ask is, okay, so you're in a soap opera and your character, whatever happens, you're still alive, right? They just like move on with your character or whatever. And you, do you get a call from your agent? They're like, hey, we want you, they want you back to reprise your role. Like, how does that usually work?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I got a call to come back to a General Hospital 15 years after I left. So that's something I never thought would happen.
Did
so,
somebody yeah. replace you like too? Like,
oh, yeah. When I left, Billy Warlock replaced me.
So yeah. Did you replace Billy Warlock?
No, they had, he died. AJ, my character died. And he wasn't really dead. He got resuscitated. And it was, so when he came out of, you know, the hospital, it was me.
Yeah. That's why I was laughing when I was watching your show, when I was watching Studio City, because I was like, he doesn't have cancer. They can always just say, oh, the cancer's removed.
They always do shit whatever. Like that. It's, you know, contract negotiations time.
Right. You know, they're just like, you know, we're going to do that. We're going to threaten your job, but right. It doesn't matter because your character could come back. Like, and it's so weird because, you know, it's just like all of a sudden it's like, AJ, you're back, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, like all of a sudden, like people just accept this, you know?
Them soaps.
Yep. That's hilarious. So let's get into your book. So you wrote this amazing book. It's like a philosophical, like more like a self-help book, would you say?
Yep, that's what I would say. The structure of the book is that I'm the sensei and you were a student in my dojo, the dojo of life, of Cobra Life. So what is a Cobra? Well, Cobra is an acronym formed from the words character, optimization, balance, respect, and abundance. And a Cobra is somebody that is leading their most, living their most authentic self, leading their best life. Someone who has unleashed their inner badass. And I say that everyone's got an inner badass. It might be yet undiscovered. It might have gotten lost along the way, but everyone's got one. And these are the battle-tested strategies that I have used to make some significant changes and success in my life. About 3 years ago, I was in a place where I had some pretty significant success. I had a couple of epic failures. I was 35 pounds overweight. I had no prospects for work. And I said to myself, I'm going to have to do some things very differently, very quickly. Rather than waiting for my ship to come in, I decided I was going to build the damn ship. And these are the strategies that allowed me in that same year to lose the 35 pounds, to co-author Success Factor X, which became an Amazon new release bestseller. It was voted one of the 20 most inspirational books of the last two decades by Book Authority, and get Studio City on Amazon Prime and nominated for 8 Emmys and win one.
Oh, that's amazing.
I don't say that to impress you. I say it to impress upon you and everybody what is possible when you make some changes.
Well, I mean, okay. So, and your book helps the people do that basically.
Absolutely. Listen, and I say this on every podcast. Yeah, I'm doing podcasts because I want to sell books. Of course I do. But from the bottom of my heart, I know that the information in this book has the ability to transform people's lives. And if you transform yourself, you can transform the world. And I want to get this book in everybody's hands.
So with that being said, you have a special offer.
I do. Give me a second. Give me a second. I'll get set up here. Okay. Let's see. You're going to have to give me just a second to do this. Okay. Okay. And okay. So let's see.
Actually, it looks pretty cool.
See that? Oh, the thing's still on. Sorry.
You can sort of see it, but you can. It's coming in and out.
Background and filters. Let's go with none. Okay, there we go. And get that guy out of there. Come on, Sean. Yeah. Attaboy. Okay. So this is, you can see it's huge. This is a 40 by 30 poster. It's a one-of-a-kind piece of art on canvas. And everybody who orders my book between now And the end of May will be entered into a drawing. And if you win, you get the book, you get that piece of artwork signed by me and a personalized video. Well, you'll bought the book. So you get the piece of artwork and the video. And it's a really cool piece. Everybody who's come into my home and seen it, they said, wow, why don't you just keep it? But no, I want to do this, you know, for everybody who comes and joins the dojo, who buys the book. So if you if you order the book at waveofthecobra.com, it automatically enters you. And also we've got a special discount code for your viewers, which is Moody, M-O-O-D-Y. If you put that in, you're going to get 15% off.
That is more awesome.
More books you buy, the more chances you got.
All right. So there you go. Go buy one. I plan on buying one. Mainly because I really like, I get it. Cause me personally, I know that once you do some changes, so you don't know much about me. We've just met through like Twitter and everything. So we don't really know much about each other, except for I know your career. But like I moved out to LA, you know, last year, like 2020, kind of the perfect year, right? From Virginia.
Okay.
And then I just moved back to Virginia. I'm in Virginia right now, this year, because things just,
you picked a tough time to move out.
I know. And you know, obviously, and in the beginning of my, like my first month, things were going pretty well, you know, then things kind of died down in February, and then things really died down in March. And then after then, it's just been kind of like, figuring things out and everything. I've done background on 4 Lifetime movies. I've done, my first acting thing was working on The Asylum. So like, it was cool, but it was like in the same sense, it was, you know, wrong time. And, you know, and I had to make some changes, and I was like, and I did not want to move back, but I was like, this just, right now, I just got to get my shit together and everything. And, like, and I've been wanting something, you know, to come along that might help me with like figuring things out.
You know, listen, I'll tell you. So before I leave you, because I'm going to have to go soon, let me leave you with a couple of the nuts and bolts things that I did, so that I can give you some of the actual strategy instead of talking about, you know, vagaries. So the first thing is, we've all heard carpe diem, seize the day, the Latin phrase seize the day. So I have co-opted the phrase carpe mane, which means seize the morning. If you can dominate the morning, if you can get up 90 minutes earlier than you do, before you are bombarded by the chaos of the day, and if you can do the following couple things, it is gonna change the trajectory of your day. Doesn't mean you're not gonna have difficult days, doesn't mean you're not gonna have challenges, but you are setting yourself up for success. First thing, and this is not a philosophical, theological discussion, I get on my knees and I thank God for 5 things. And it, you know, and for me, it's easy. I look over, I see my wife in bed. Thank you there. Look at the roof over my head, my parents, my dog, my health, my career. And when you start your day in gratitude, you're living in the present. Okay. You're not worrying about the past, and you're not potentially being fearful of the future. If you're an atheist, fantastic. Just list 5 things. Okay. The next thing is I meditate for about 5 minutes. And one of the great things, the little hack I'll teach you, is that you can use your smartphone or use your Echo or whatever. And I say it like that because I've got them all over the house. And if I say it, they start all talking. And just set it for 5 minutes and just start meditating. And if you don't know how to do it, I talk about it in the book. And what it does is it silences the monkey chatter. It silences all that bombastic inner dialogue that we all have all day long. And it centers you and it focuses you and gets you ready for the day. The next thing, and I don't do this all the time, but I recommend it. I do a little journaling and I guarantee it for like 3 minutes. And I guarantee if you do it, you will not instantly become a 6th grade girl writing in her diary. And what I do is I just write stream of conscious. And it could be something like, I want another cup of coffee. I don't want to be writing this. This sucks. I've got a lot of shit to do today. What are my mom's doing today? Blah, blah, blah. It could be all crap. The idea is you're getting that, it's more of that, you know, that bombastic inner monologue out on a piece of paper, you throw it away, you're done. Okay. The next thing is I do visualization. I visualize, you know, what I want to accomplish for the different things that I have going on in the day. You know, whether if I have a business meeting, you know, who am I meeting? How do I want that to go? I visualize, how am I going to drive there? How can I not only get what I want out of this meeting, but bring value to the other person? Because I'm a big proponent of win-win scenarios, okay? And the next thing is read. Reading is the great equalizer. You do not have to be formally educated. You can be, socioeconomically challenged. You can be incarcerated. And reading has the ability to share the thoughts of great men and women throughout history with you. It has the ability to expose you to different cultures and to take you to faraway places. It expands your mind. And over the course of a year, if you read 20 pages a day, the amount of new good information you're putting into your head will change your life. It has to. So just doing those things really sets you up for having a successful day.
Wow. I was surprised. I thought for some reason exercise would be in there too.
Exercise. Absolutely. And, and I mentioned that in the book too. I see for me, I'm not one of those people that usually exercises in the morning. I like to do it in the afternoon. Absolutely exercise. For me, that goes without saying. So that's why I didn't even put it. I assume
everybody would.
Listen, if you're overweight, if you're out of shape, go walk. And you know what? You can kill two birds with one stone because you can actually, your walking can be meditative for you. And, if you're looking to improve your relationship, go take a walk with your significant other, spend that time with them, connect with them, it doesn't have to be throwing around the iron in the gym or, getting in the cage doing MMA, just do something.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. Thank you so much. This has been very helpful, very informative. And I really appreciate having you on as a guest. I wish you the best of luck on everything. And I really I'm one of those guys really campaigning for Mike Barnes to show up on Cobra Kai, because I feel especially with the way that you've been talking lately about how you feel like Mike Barnes was a little one-dimensional back then. I feel like the show's kind of changed a lot with how they view the characters. And if Mike Barnes is brought back, he'll probably be more of a three-dimensional, kind of really cool,
And we shall see. Hey, listen, John, thank you so much. And I'm just gonna leave you with one piece of unsolicited advice. Don't look at leaving Los Angeles and coming back to Virginia as a failure or a retreat. Sun Tzu talks about sometimes, in the art of war, sometimes the best thing you can do is withdraw your troops for a while do a little more planning and then re-engage in the fight. So just because you came out at a horrendous time with circumstances that were absolutely beyond your control. So I know, natural inclination might be to look around and say, gosh, I was trying to get out of here and now I'm back here. But put a positive spin on it. And, when you read the book, you'll see that. And you may decide you don't want to go back to LA. But if you do, you're going to do it with some renewed knowledge and some renewed strength of spirit and will. And I wish you the best.
That is awesome. All right. What is that?
I said, I look forward to seeing you on the set sometime.
Oh yeah, definitely. I really would love to work with you. Thank you so much. And everybody, thank you guys for watching, checking this out. I'll put the link down in the bottom so people can check this out and everything. If you don't mind 2 seconds staying around and everything, and everybody else, bye. Have a good one.
Bye guys.